Welcome to QUT Exec Insights, brought to you by QUTX, Professional and Executive Education for the Real World. In this episode, we're continuing with our series where we share with our listeners the wonderful richness of the QUT community of researchers and teachers, those who are making an impact on the real world. I call this thread Cool QUT. With me is distinguished Professor Kerry Mengerson. Kerry's research expertise is statistical methodology and its applications, and this includes, of course, making sense of big data. Kerry is Deputy Director and Chief Investigator in the Centre of Excellence in Maths and Statistical Frontiers, and she has around her a group of about 30 postgraduate and postdoctoral researchers in this increasingly in-demand area of expertise. So welcome, Kerry.
Thank you.
So a lot of listeners will be saying this thing about big data, so I think we'll jump straight into that kind of area. So the presentation that I saw you do when I was preparing for this interview was entitled, Now That We Have It, What Are We Going to Do With It? How Maths and Stats Can Save Us from Drowning in Big Data. So first of all, when we say big data, what are we actually talking about?
Interesting question. The area of the words big data mean different things to different people. And typically we're talking about data that are unusual for us to deal with. So now we have a range of a whole wide variety and volume and different types of data that we can have access to. So whereas before we might have been constrained to collecting observational data, now we have sensors, we have mobile phones, we have social media, we have all kinds of different access and sources of data. So now the question is, you know, what do we do with all that kind of different data? And so different groups will be able to deal with different types of data. So for example, satellite data has been around for many years, and the groups that work with satellite data know how to deal with it. But for most of us, if we got an image from a satellite, we wouldn't know how to extract information from that. Similarly, there's brain scans. How do we deal with brain scans? And not just one, but many, multiple brain scans over multiple people. How do we deal with data from social media? And so one of my colleagues, Claire Alston Knox, came up with the term big data is inconveniently large data.
I like that definition. So, I saw that and I thought, oh, that's pretty easy.
So it's inconveniently, the data,
it kind of escapes our normal abilities to.
So it's the data that we don't really know what to do with in terms of size or volume or type, or the quality of the data and so on. So we need to take all of these things into account when we're trying to really extract the value from the data that we have available to us nowadays.
And in business, I mean, we know that some businesses are absolutely competing on their ability to grapple with big data. So we know that what they call the FANGs, so Facebook, Amazon, Google, so forth, they are really out-competing on their basis of actually having sensors in people's hands. So they've got a really good bead on consumers and their preferences. And over time, that competition will absolutely, grow in importance. So what's your observations, certainly in the business field, about people's capability to make sense of big data?
So the big data is not just for the Google and Amazon companies, but it's also for smaller companies. So for example, getting to understand customers, getting to understand trends, getting to understand products and so on. But companies at all levels and businesses and governments that can all benefit from using data in different and innovative ways. And the sorts of things that I see, the trends that I see, where people were sort of asking the question of what kind of data can I access, to now being asking the question of what do I do with the data that I can access, because it is much more open now. There's a big push for open data, for quality data, for repeatable data, so data that you can, or analyses that you can replicate. And so that brings us to the question of trust in the data. Mm-hmm. So people are now asking, how trustworthy are my data? And they're also asking the question of, there's big questions around storage and management of those data. And those kinds of technologies using cloud computing and other sources of storage and management are really now taking off and are becoming much more mainstream. And so the questions now are not around how do I get data or how I store it, but more about how I analyze it. And so the real trends now are in analytics. Yeah, advanced analytics is really now where the business value is in data.
So, I mean, that's really interesting that you said the potential for big data is not just for the you know, the Facebooks and Amazons, but small business, so even small retail could leverage off the power of the data that they have probably even more freely available to them. So what capabilities will they require to really extract the value from the data they have available to them? Do they need to access your postgraduate students?
Well, that's a very good start. Yeah. But I think there's the capabilities now are around, there are capabilities around data analytics. So there's some capabilities around manipulating data, understanding the value of the data that people have and being able to sort of trade on those data. Understanding then about doing basic kinds of analyses with the data, but also understanding that not everybody can do everything, and so it's really entering into partnerships with groups that can analyze data or can help to train people in organizations, because sometimes what we see are people are setting up a data science team, for example, which might be the one or two people, and then they're in isolation. So part of that is creating the networks of the analysts so that those analysts can then learn from each other. It's such a fast moving area, and what we want to be able to do is to bring the value to the collective group of analysts. And so part of what we're doing is not just training our high-end analysts, but also then providing more general training about analytics and also about smart thinking too, so that even if you're not the person doing the analysis, you might at least have a good understanding of the kinds of questions you could ask of the data and what you might reasonably ask of the results. So not you don't just need to accept results on face value, but you know, you have a good sense of how do I critically review the kinds of results that I'm seeing from the analyses. Mm. So those kinds of high level critical review methods and skills, and then also of course for the technical people, the analysts themselves, about having access to support and training for skill development.
Yeah, so the right kinds of questions and the way to approach data, so all that richness of statistical thinking.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And it really opens up a new way of thinking about things, so we don't have to be thinking about our demographics or about our products or about the services or these kinds of things in the same ways that we did before. So for example, the Bureau of Statistics now and official statistics around the world are being really proactive in understanding how they might use different sources of data to compile the sorts of statistics that they would generally publish. So for example, statistics on poverty or statistics on crops, agriculture. Farmers suck at filling out surveys, and so how do we get at that information? Well, we could use remote sensing, so satellite data, coming back to that. So then they need the training in how to use those data, but then also how trustworthy are those data for official statistics, and then how do managers then actually convert that to use? For official statistics. And so it's not just companies, but it's also governments can make use of this.
And I was really intrigued by the example that I saw in your presentation about the question, how do we understand congestion at airports?
Yes, that's
so,
right.
That's really practical. And that opens up all kinds of questions. It's not, you would think about, well, certain times a day, you know, there's more flights, but it invites a more systems view, I suppose, of that kinds of questions if you have a more comprehensive set of data that you can exploit.
Yeah, and you can imagine at the airport there's all sorts of data that are available from image recognition of people walking through the airport, to the sensors for people in queues, to all the bags that are checked through, to flights arriving and the demographics of people arriving. So lots of information that can be compiled and then used to improve efficiency at the airport. And that's the job of big data, and it's the job of the analysts like us.
So how evolved, in your observation, are business, and I'll go in Australia here, in terms of their ability to extract value? Are we at the well-evolved part of the spectrum, or are we lagging with other countries, do you think?
Certainly, there are some other countries that have set up like national centres for data science, for example. Australia doesn't have anything like that at the moment, but they do have fairly advanced groups working in this area. So there's the university groups and CSIRO Data 61. There's also some companies that are really quite advanced in this field and world leading. But generally, it's across the spectrum. So while there are leading organisations, then there are also companies that are just sort of starting out on the journey. And I think it really is this creating these networks across different organisations so that there can be discussions at different levels. So while some people are still asking the question, what's the value in doing this? Because there is a setup cost obtaining those data and developing the analytic tools for it, right through to the, now we're well on the way in doing this, and how do we start to think more creatively about what we can do? Mm-hmm. So Australia is like most other countries in that way, in having that range of skills.
I had heard big data described like teenage sex. You know, everyone says they're doing it.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
No one, we're all still a bit nervous about the whole thing.
Yeah. That's right, exactly.
And also, you mentioned before about open data and opening our data sets. So we have a public sector management program, you know, here at NQUTX. So, and I talk about this with our students, and they said, we're trying to get data sets that we have up and freely available to the community, because we don't know what they might want to do with it. They might make creative use, you know, of all the data that governments collect. But then sometimes a month later they'll say, we've actually pulled that data set back and we're not making it available. What's your sense of our appetite for making the data that we have in government open and freely available for whomever wants to do creative things with it?
It's a bit of a push-pull system, I think, in that when the data are available, then people will... So a demand creates a supply, and also demand creates quality data. So often, you know, people will collect data, but there could be quality issues related to it. And then those quality issues really get... resolved, or data become better quality when people realise that there is a demand for it or it's being used. Of course, we do better when we realise that our work is being appreciated and being used. There's also then the question of that data aren't collected for free, and there's a cost to collecting data. And so I think there's a lot more realisation about the value of data, and that plays out in different ways. So organisations or governments might say, well, these data are actually valuable, yeah, and there should be some payment associated with it or some reward associated with providing it. But then realising that a lot of the value of the data comes when it's actually the analysis or the benefit is realised. And so there is this sort of push-pull about making data like freely available when it's being collected. There's also privacy and confidentiality issues, yeah, of course, and the sort of scale at which the data might be made available. So those kinds of things come into play as well. But to my mind, when data are open, then there can be so much more benefit that can be gained from the collective.
Yes, that's right. And who knows what a creative scientist will do with different data sets?
You know, absolutely.
To see the intersection and make questions among those. So you're doing some research for very close to home here at the QUT Gardens Point campus, which is with the new Queen's Wharf development. So some of
that's
the questions
right.
that you are asking with the benefit of data that you can collect is the impact of that Queen's Wharf development. For those of us who are listening across the world, and your eye out there, thank you for that. Very close to the QT Gardens Point is an inner city campus in the CBD, and on our doorstep will be a multi-billion dollar casino development with retail and some open space. And there are a lot of questions to ask about what the impact will be of such a large-scale development, which is of course one of many large-scale developments happening in Brisbane at the moment. So what kind of questions do you think you'll be able to answer? And what kinds of data sets will you pull on to do that?
This project was commissioned by the state government and now has the backing also in the involvement of STAR, which is involved in building the project. So it was really commendable, I think, of both these organisations to have the vision to develop this long-term monitoring program. So when in another development like this in Brisbane is Southbank, and which was developed 30 years ago, and so that was for Expo. And so at the time when Southbank was developed, there was really no concept of having a long-term monitoring of the impact of Southbank, but it's had an enormous impact on our city. And so now with this new development, which is going to be of comparable size, then there is now the motivation to put in place a long-term 30-year monitoring program to identify the benefits and impacts of such a development, an urban development. And so we were asked to set up a plan for that long-term monitoring program. And so over the course of a couple of months, really sat down and asked, well, what are the kinds of economic and social what are the types of economic and social indicators and measures, and what kind of data might we have on those? So we came up with a wheel, and on that wheel were 22 economic and social indicators, and then identified the data sources for those. So those data sources were from government and also from private industry. So part of it was, for example, from Telstra about mobile phones and people movement, so connectivity around the city. How would such a development improve connectivity? What kind of social media is being used? And what signals can we have from that social media about the development? What do we learn about tourist numbers and attraction to the area? What's happening in terms of jobs, in terms of buildings and that kind of stuff? So a whole range of different impacts. There's impacts of employment, but also impacts of gambling. Mm-hmm. And so a very strong emphasis on looking at the benefits and impacts of gambling and looking at having an advisory board that would oversee that the surveys that are being undertaken for that, and also the collection of data from Queensland, but also from Victoria and New South mm-hmm. Wales as well, and learning from developments in those states to be able to inform this development as well.
So it's the full range of social and economic, technological...
That's right, yeah, exactly.
...political probably, dimensions, with the richness of all that sensors data and data that we can observe.
Exactly.
So the full range. Yeah, that'll be an amazing thing to have a longitudinal study to inform.
Yeah, I think it will be very interesting to be able to, in the future, look back and say, how has it changed our city?
Mm. So with your students, Kerry, and you have a range of people in the centre that you mentor and oversee their research, so how do you see their discipline changing and evolving over that time? So when we gradually move away from academia, and I was saying to Kerry before, she and I are months we're at the same age to only a few months, so but when after we move out of academia and they're still at their peak, how will that whole area of maths and stats and AI and machine learning change and evolve in the next 5 to 10 years? I imagine it's going to, I just see this great flowering and fruition of demand for their skills, and that their discipline changing with the amount of data available to them. Have I got that about right?
Yes. So as we were saying, the area that's really in demand is the advanced analytics. And that's across the range of maths, stats, and machine learning techniques. and bringing together those different disciplines. And really, that's what we're trying to do in our group, to create the interdisciplinary teams that might be able to solve more complex problems. So bringing together economists and social scientists and statisticians and machine learners and computer scientists to really ask questions of the problem and to really try to drive new solutions and new insights. We have really also then the ability to bring in, and part of the remit of our group is to have secondments from government and business to come in and learn techniques and to be able to develop, for example, policies around big data and the rollout of data analytics in government. So coming in, being able to be exposed to the different new ideas and ways of thinking and new techniques, and then taking those back into industry and government. And that kind of porous boundary between universities and governments, I think, and organisations will be really important in the future. This is such a fast-moving area. There's so much to do, and there's a lot that we can learn from each other. So that's going to be really important in the future.
No one will let you retire, I don't think. You'll have to stay with us for a while.
The other, I think, really interesting thing is that there's so much online now that can be done. So I have students who really come in and say, I don't need you to teach me anymore. And this is from our undergrads as well, and postgrads. So they'll say, I don't need you to teach me. I just need you to point me in the right direction, because there's so much out there on the web, and I know that I need to learn skills. I don't know what it is that I should learn, and I don't know what the best way to learn, like the best tools or the best sites are for learning that. So send me a program, send me on my way, and I'll just work my way to do it. Oh, and it's amazing. It's great to see.
Those are the gratifying moments.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally.
So talk about transdisciplinary. So Kerry finished her presentation that I saw bringing in some aesthetics, which was poetry, and I just thought this brought me closer to understanding the power and the beauty of math. So I'll end with Kerry sharing that with us.
Yeah, so this is a poem by John Gillespie McGee, who it's called High Flight, and just the first and last part of it is really beautiful, I think. So it says, oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter silver wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of. And while with silent lifting mind I've trod the high untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God.
And on that note, distinguished Professor Kerry Mengerson, thank you for joining us for our 21st episode of QUT Exec Insights.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of QUT Exec Insights, brought to you by QUTX, Executive Education for the Real World. You can comment on the podcast or make suggestions for future guests at execinsights@qut.edu.au. We would love to hear from you. If you would like more information about professional development for yourself or your team, please search QUTX, that's QUTEX, and you will find our full range of programs. I'm your host, Kate Joyner, with sound recording and editing by Lance Scaife-Elliott. See you next time.